Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. Well, it's almost November. Halloween's right around the corner. I don't know about you guys, but I really felt like fall was never going to come. We got some kind of crazy warm weather the last week. Still made it fun because it was kind of cold at night, cold in the morning, but warm during the day. Now here we are. We got our fall weather back. We've got football in full swing. Basketball is back. The World Series is happening. The MLS playoffs are right around the corner. College basketball is right around the corner. If this isn't your time of year and you're a sports fan, I don't know what to say to you, but this is definitely my time of year. But more power to you if it's not for you. I don't know what to talk to you about, but that is what it is. Anyway, want to bring in co-host, special guest, co-friend, co-pilot, co-brother-in-law, whatever you want to call him. He's Bryant Knox. He's on Twitter, he's on Facebook, he's on ESPN, he's on Bleacher Report, on the OSN, at OSN. He's everywhere. He's a man about planet Earth. If you haven't checked him out, please do. His work is incredible. The guy just gets it. Bryant, want to bring you in. How the heck are you tonight? Are you doing okay? I know your Dolphins are playing. They're playing okay. They're holding on against the Texans on the road. Thursday Night Football. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, Casey, except I got to be honest, I'm not even watching that Dolphins game because my official man crush, my overgrown adult son, however you want to phrase it, Jason Tatum, is just doing work on TNT right now against OKC. He's already put PG-13 on a very R-rated poster, just how filthy it was. I love watching this kid play basketball so much that I'll do it overwatching my Dolphins on the only game of the night. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, not a very good game, regardless of whether you're a fan of those fan bases or not. It's just not. I mean, you got Brock Osweiler starting for the Dolphins. You got an injured Deshaun Watson starting for Houston. Neither team has much of a defense to speak of. Not a ton of star power than DeAndre Hopkins on Houston and J.J. Watt on Houston. Other than that, you're kind of stuck in the mud. But I'm doing good, man. It's good to have you back. It's been a couple weeks, so really good to be back on the air and broadcasting live to the great city of Portland and the great Northwest, city of Seattle, city of Vancouver, all the cities around here. We really appreciate you guys listening. If you haven't already, we started a new thing this week. We're going to have a little offline debate about five topics, a two-person roundtable, if you will, leading up to the show each week as kind of a play-in teaser, not necessarily to get you to listen, because hopefully you already are, but definitely to kind of get some more insight on how we build our show and what we're thinking. So if you haven't checked that out, it's on the site. Make sure you are. Each week we'll post that before we do the show. So, really quick, Bryant, you mentioned Jason Tatum. How bad does that trade look now that Boston got Tatum and gave up the number one and Philadelphia got Markelle Fultz? Does that look bad in the rearview mirror right now?
Oh, it looks atrocious.
Unless you're Boston.
Yeah, and that's coming from someone who actually still is medium high on Markelle Fultz. I think that Fultz can turn it around. I think that he can fix his jumper because we've seen it work before. And I think that he can build a game that doesn't involve his jumper as prominently as it did in college. Now, I believe all that, and yet I still believe it's insane that Boston was able to trade down in the draft two picks to get him. Not only should Philly be kicking themselves, we got to be real here. The Lakers need to be kicking themselves too because, yep. I'm not going to say that Jason Tatum is the next Kobe Bryant, but he's already worked out with Kobe. He has a lot of Kobe in his mid-range and the way that he gets above the rim in his 20-year-old season.
Can you imagine him and LeBron on the same team right now?
He and LeBron would just be ridiculous on that Lakers roster. And again, this is coming from someone who thinks Lonzo Ball has a big jump ahead of him as well. But as much as I believe Lonzo Ball and Markelle Fultz can be better than they currently are, Jason Tatum's just so far ahead that if either of those teams could get their hands on him now, there's no doubt they'd do it.
Yeah, and I mean, I love Tatum, but you also got to look at the 76ers. Let's pretend that they drafted Ben Simmons ahead of Tatum last year. He still beat Simmons head to head in the semifinals last year. I believe it only took 5 games, maybe 6 games. Didn't even go the distance, and then took 7 games. Almost took LeBron and made it to the finals. And you could argue that a Warriors-Celtics series would have been more competitive and more fun to watch than the one we got between Golden State and Cleveland.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it. It would have been more entertaining. I'm not even sure Boston would have won a game, if I'm being completely honest, but each individual game would have been far more entertaining. The matchups would have been better. Boston would have been more balanced, which would have forced Golden State's defense to adjust. It would have been a lot of fun, but we don't really have to think about it too hypothetically because it could very well take place this upcoming finals in June.
It definitely could, and now they have Kyrie back and they have Gordon Hayward back, two players that they were without for the playoffs last year. So who knows how far they could have gotten if they had either one, if not both of those players ready and rolling on the roster.
Yeah.
So moving into our topics that we brought up in our pre-show column that we posted earlier today. First things first, the Blazers are 3-1. They won tonight. They won in Orlando. They started the season off against LA, won that one, then won against San Antonio, lost a heartbreaker in overtime to Washington, and then now they've beaten Orlando. I'm looking at this and going, I've seen fast starts from Portland so many times, I don't buy into it. It feels like smoke and mirrors to me until I see what they do in the early first rounds of the playoffs. Until they win a series that I feel like is a legitimate win and then go on and do something in the second round and make some noise there, I don't really care how many games they win in October and November. I'm really having a hard time shying away from that. I know they've got some more talent this year and some more depth, but it's still one of those things where you're not really sure what you're going to get out of them. I think you agreed with that in your take slightly anyway. How do you feel about that a day later?
Yeah, I'm pretty much right there with you for two reasons. And actually, it's more like 5 or 6 reasons, but you'll see what I mean.
Right.
The first reason being that Portland has really become very formulaic at this point. They get off to a nice start, typically because the NBA schedules them a lot of home games early. So that helps, and it helps them from having to grow cross-country early, which they actually, ironically enough, just made the trip from Portland to Orlando the other day, so maybe I'm not 100% correct there, but all I'm getting at is that they typically start hot. That's a tongue twister.
Yeah,
and they typically have a nice post All-Star, 13 games in a row that they win, but they also have a late stretch, I don't know, 10 or 11 games that they lose. Like, this team has just become a little bit predictable. And so until I see otherwise, I can't really give them the benefit of the doubt. Now, the second reason, which I said is more like 4 or 5 reasons, is really because there are a few things that are happening right now which I don't think are sustainable. The very first game, you got Nick Stauskas playing like vintage Sauce Castillo out there against the Lakers. He was probably the best player on the court to start the game, which was
good old
incredible.
Tapatio.
Yep. You have Evan Turner kind of looking like he's back in Boston form. Now, he still isn't shooting very well, but he has looked very good on the ball as Terry Stotts staggers the minutes with the guards. And then you also have a guy like Nurkic, who's just putting up kind of bonkers numbers right now. And all three of those things I don't think are necessarily sustainable, which makes me, just a little weary to think that this hot start is going to continue.
Well, one thing that worries me is they're notorious for starting off hot, face planting in December and January, cleaning it up in late January, winning a few before the All-Star break, and then they come out red hot and rolling in the second half of the season, claim they claim like a low seed playoff spot, and then proceed to face plant in the playoffs. I feel like you watch some of these other veteran teams, and they're kind of easing into their rotations and easing into their big ramp up right now. They're not playing as fast or as hard as they possibly can. And then in December, they really start going crazy around Christmas time, if I'm not mistaken. And then they take that through the end of the season, get whatever placement they're going to get. And then the postseason, they've got fresh legs. They're not worried about guys running out of steam. And then even better, they've got a bunch of guys on the bench that they know they can trust because they help them win games in December and January. I worry because Portland seems to do that only when it has to happen. If they would ease off a little bit right now, I would be fine if they lost a few games right now and then win some later on in the year when everybody else is getting a little tired and you're seeing the elite teams rise at the top.
Yeah, pretty much right there with you. Like I said, they've become very formulaic, and I wish they could, as you just pointed out, sort of swap out, you know, a couple of the different consistencies and throw in a few variables there, because the variables are, yes, what makes them a little riskier, like in your point, losing games now, but it's what also makes them a heck of a lot more exciting and competitive, which to your example was winning games late.
Right. Well, and then, you know, you look at some of the other teams that go on these little, like, losing streaks around late January, early February, like the Warriors and the Cavs and some of these other elite teams we've come to know and love and expect in the playoffs and to go deep in the playoffs. And it seems like Portland doesn't follow suit there. Would you be okay with seeing them maybe take a nosedive around the All-Star break and you go in hearing all these questions about if they have what it takes and they come out smoking at the end of the All-Star break and make a run for one of the top five seeds? Or do you like the formula they've got now where they expend all this energy in October and November, take a break in December and January, and then kill themselves in March and April only to fall short in the playoffs?
Well, I think balance is always better. You know, people talk about momentum in sports quite a bit. And when you have momentum going into the postseason, that's more of a mental part of the game. It's going to convince you that you basically can do no wrong when you have more momentum. So I do understand that concept as well. But I personally like balance. I like a team that isn't going to ebb too high, or it's not going to have too many ebbs and flows one way or the other. And I just kind of want to see balance all the way through. So I'd really like to see them. You know, they've won, what, three of their first four games? Obviously, they're not going to win 75% of their games on the year.
81-1, still in play.
They could very well, though, win three, lose two, win two, lose two, win three. Like, I'm not saying that's the ultimate way to do it, but at least in the second half of the year, I would rather see that than them have already given up all their energy.
Well, if you have to pick games to lose, isn't it? I mean, I'm not suggesting they tank by any means on the road, but if they're going on the road to face an Eastern Conference opponent, isn't it okay to maybe not play your starters the whole game and rotate in your reserve guys?
Probably, but you're getting into a really touchy issue there because you also have the league that's overseeing how much teams are playing their stars on the road. I know that you didn't suggest you sit them all together, but when you start to shave their minutes, that's when the league intervenes and starts saying, hey, you can't. Because there was another example where a guy a couple years ago didn't actually sit the game. He started it, and I can't remember who it was, so I apologize. But the league fined the team for playing him less than they should have during a regular season game. And so you get kind of in a touchy situation there where you're dealing with the league overseeing stuff like that.
I'm not going to say this, but I'm going to kind of say it and say it is interesting that the Warriors need Steph Curry late in the playoffs, and yet every year around the end of March, he has a quote-unquote injury that keeps him off the court for up to 3 to 4 weeks.
And then
he's rusty in the first or second round, and then by the third and fourth round, he is just the best ace you could ever ask for. Is it out of line to say they might want to sit Dame and CJ a couple of times towards the end of the season and make sure they're fresh?
It's an interesting theory, but Portland isn't typically in a situation like Golden State is where it can coast and know it already has a number one seed or a number two seed. Portland is typically, you know, half a game away from either bumping themselves up a seed or down two seeds. So it's a bit of a tricky issue. Now, if you get to the last game of the season and seeding is already decided, then I'm all for it. It just becomes a little riskier when you do it before that.
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen teams like Cleveland and Golden State and San Antonio rest players in the past when they've been on like back to back to backs. I don't think we've really seen that from Portland, maybe once or twice, but it seems like it's only when they're nursing a nagging injury and they're trying to get better. Would you be okay with them saying, like, in December we're going to sit Dame for a game and then the next night he plays and CJ sits and kind of alternate him a little bit?
Yeah, I do prefer it in December than, you know, late in the season. But again, the way that my mind works, I'm thinking about the end of the season all year long. And so if they sit Dame when he's not necessarily the most injured, then you're still risking a seeding spot even though it's happening in December.
That's fair. So moving on to topic number two, we talked a little bit more about something around the NBA this week. Happened on Saturday, I believe, when Brandon Ingram shoved James Harden, went across the court, came back, and tried to re-enter the fight. A lot of people took issue with that. And the really funny thing is that that wasn't the main subject that people were discussing. It was that Chris Paul and Rajon Rondo got into a fist fight after that all happened, and that's what caused Ingram to come back. He was suspended, I believe, 5 games, something like that, and Rondo got 4, and Chris Paul got 3, something along those lines. In all this, the big topic has been LeBron James pulled Chris Paul out of the fight instead of going to the aid of Rajon Rondo. If you're in LeBron James' shoes, is that what you do, or do you go and hug Rondo and pull him away from Paul?
It's really, really interesting to think about, actually, especially with the context that the most recent thing LeBron had gone viral for was in the game against Portland on TNT when he was mic'd up and they did the replay, and he got his guys all huddled up and he said, "Hey, if you fall, stay down on the ground, stay down. Your brothers will come get you," as if they're all brothers, they're all family members, they're all teammates. And then right. The very next game, 2 days later, he very infamously went directly to Chris Paul instead. So I think that context is really interesting about it. You know, from my perspective, I've never been of the old school mentality that NBA players can't be friends. I think that they grew up in a different system, the AAU system. They all played together. They all traveled together. It's a very different system than it used to be in an AAU era. And so I think that having friends on the court is fine. That said, if I'm LeBron, I separate Chris Paul, and then as soon as he is calmed down or pushed off to the side or whatever it is, I go back to my teammate. I don't sit there and hang out with him on the court. So I do think there's a middle ground there, and LeBron kind of missed it.
Yeah, I think that he definitely did, and I'm still shocked that people are getting so hung up on the Paul and Rondo and James triangle that it's like Ingram ran halfway across the court to go punch somebody else. I think that that's the part that's getting overlooked. It's really scary that that's the part that's not getting enough attention. This is a dude that wasn't even in the fight and ran back across the court to fight. Then you've got the scary thing in all of this, actually, is Carmelo Anthony being the voice of reason and just throwing his hands up and not fighting anybody. That's the part that kind of baffles me the most. So I guess in all this, maybe I'm finally taking Carmelo Anthony's side.
Yeah, and you got to remember a few years back, or more than a few years ago, it was when he was still playing for Denver and they were actually in New York, ironically enough. Carmelo was the one who ran across the court and popped somebody as a sucker punch during a huge, probably the biggest melee the NBA had seen since the Malice at the Palace.
Too soon.
And so Carmelo has really come a long way, and clearly Brandon Ingram has a long way to go, because not to say he won't get there. Maturity can do many great things for a young man, no doubt. But you got to remember, Brandon Ingram actually started this little fracas as well, because for absolutely no reason that anybody can figure out, he was so heated that he shoved James Harden after the play. James Harden had no clue what was going on, and then that's when CP3 and Rondo got into it. So this thing really does have a lot more to do with Brandon Ingram than people even are talking about. Oh, yeah. You're 100% correct.
So we'll put him as undesirable number one and move on from that. I mean, I think that's been talked about as much as it possibly can be. The players are suspended. Life goes on. It's early in the NBA. We'll forget about this later in the year. It'll be something different. But right now, it's kind of sad. That's the most exciting thing we've had in the NBA so far this season. But it's early. It's only a few games played. We'll get to something better. Our next topic, we talked about the Ducks losing at Washington State. Huge win for the Cougars. First time they've had ESPN's College Game Day come to one of their games. The Ducks, they lost to Stanford 2 weeks before that. Now they beat Washington in overtime thriller, and then they go and pull this and lose in tragic fashion to the Cougars. I mean, it wasn't even close. It was something like 27-0 at halftime. They made it close. I think it was 27-17 by the end, but I don't know. I came away from this one going, good for the Cougars. I mean, it's a big win for them and their program, and they're definitely underrated, but I just felt like this was the Ducks kind of shooting themselves in the foot and burying themselves in their own coffin. I mean, this puts them out of the playoffs for sure. It definitely takes them out of contention for the North and the Pac-12, or at least it makes it very difficult for them. And now really all you have to look forward to is the Civil War and then maybe a meaningless bowl game that you might watch, you might not. Do you have a more positive outlook than that, or are you kind of down in the doldrums where I am, where you're not really sure if this season matters anymore?
No, I think that your end result is 100% correct. I think that the fans start to probably tune out. Maybe some of them tune back in for the Beavers game, the Civil War. And then, yeah, the diehards will watch whatever bowl game they end up in, and the casual fans won't. That is 100% correct. But I do have a more positive spin on all of that, which is that I think that the Ducks are going to continue making progress on the field. I'm with you that I don't think the casual fans are going to care so much about that at this point. But I really do think that what you end up seeing is that Oregon started out this year and it didn't actually realize how good it was. It didn't realize what it was capable of. And so as it started to improve week after week, and it nearly beat Stanford and then it did beat Washington, I think you started to see that this team's confidence and its ability grew week in and week out. Now, I think that's going to continue because this isn't a team that entered week one saying we are a title contender or bust, right? That was never their mentality in the first year under a new coach, the first year after a terrible bowl game, and that was just not the way that they came into the year thinking. Now, though, they're realizing they can get better, and that's really, really important for this group going into year two, and I think they realize that.
Yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see what they do next year. We already have a, you know, verbal commitment from Justin Herbert that he's coming back next year, so we're not going to worry about him leaving. But doesn't mean he's for sure not leaving. It's just right now his commitment is to Oregon in this season, and we'll kind of see what happens after this. But definitely curious what will happen next year and in the games following this one and seeing where they end up at the end of the year if they win out and prove that this was just a one-off and they were better than this. I really hope that they only lose two the whole season, but wouldn't shock me if they lose another one the rest of the way, but close it out strong against OSU. So the next topic, we got to hurry up because we're getting out of time. We've only got about 5 minutes left. So number four topic, we talked about NFC West games this week. We've got a really good one with Green Bay coming to L.A. on Sunday at 1 o'clock. Then you've also got Seattle going to Detroit and San Francisco at Arizona. Personally, I'm only invested in the Green Bay game because they're my team, and I want to see if they can hang with the Rams in L.A. That'll be a really good precursor. The week after that, you and I go head-to-head. We've got the Dolphins visiting the Packers, and then after that, they've got to travel to New England to take on Tom Brady and the Patriots. Honestly, the other two games, San Francisco, Arizona, unless you're a fan of those two franchises, I don't know who's watching that garbage. Seattle at Detroit, that could actually be an underrated offensive showdown because neither team has a great defense, so they've got some pretty decent passing attacks. Are there any of those three games that you're most interested in or that you want to see the most?
Yeah, I'm right there with you, actually. I want to see the Rams and the Packers. I personally don't have a vested interest in how well Green Bay plays. However, I am pretty locked in on LA right now. You know, you and I talked a couple times ahead of the season, and I thought they were going to stumble a little bit. I really did. And it turns out they haven't really done that. So as long as they're proving me wrong, I want to keep tuning in. And the fact that they're going up against one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, who maybe just happens to be my starting fantasy quarterback right now. I'm definitely tuning into that one above all else.
I've got Davante Adams on my receivers, and then I've also got Cooper Kupp that I don't think is going to play, so I may only have Green Bay skin in the game in fantasy and in real life, so hoping they don't get embarrassed, hoping they put up some points. It was neat to see the Rams and the Vikings a few weeks ago on Thursday Night Football. Now you get Green Bay going to L.A., so you know it's going to be clear skies, sunny skies, perfect time for an air raid offense, and I really hope that both teams just blow up with a ton of points and we just get a barn burner shootout.
Yes, sir. I love it.
And then Seattle is 3-3. This is their chance to get to 4-3 and be a very unlikely 500 team or better, which you and I both didn't really know if they were going to pull off this year. They do that, they're really through the toughest part of their schedule, and they might have a shot at winning 8 or 9 games this year, which we really didn't think would just... We thought that was their ceiling, but not likely. We thought they'd be like a 6 or 7 win team going in. So I'm really curious if they can pull this one out, because Detroit's no slouch. They're a quality opponent. We'll see if they can do it. And then moving on, we have the NFL trade deadline next Tuesday. So we'll have already had that come and gone next time you and I talk. But is there a trade that you want to see? Like, if you had the power to push a button and this trade happens, who are you trading and what are they getting for that trade? For me, I want to see Le'Veon Bell go to Green Bay. But then I nixed that and said, no, I don't want a one-year rental, even if it's only half a year for one of the best backs in the business. I want to get Jordan Howard from Chicago and have a really good between-the-tackles, first- and second-down runner that I can put on the field in November, January, and December and run out my opponents when the clock is getting killed. But what are some trades you want to see?
You know, if I can't get Le'Veon Bell to Miami, my Dolphins, which I'm assuming I can't, because
probably not.
Who knows what assets they can actually part with at this point? I don't claim to. So assuming that can't happen, I would love to actually see Le'Veon go to Philly. You know, if you read the piece from 2 days ago, I made it very clear that I don't have a strong affiliation with Philly sports or the Eagles, but I do love the idea of seeing a back-to-back Super Bowl champion in the NFL, because we see it so frequently these days in the NBA that nobody wants to see that, but we just never see it in the NFL, so I like the idea of it. And if the Eagles could pull it off, now they do have a good kind of running back by committee going on right now after Jay Ajayi went down for the year, so I'm not saying it's necessarily something they need to do to get back to the Super Bowl, but holy smokes, if you could add a talent like Le'Veon Bell, who hopefully has been working out these past handful of weeks and not just, you know, eating Cheetos on the couch. I don't know what his routine looks like, but I would hope it's more the getting ready for football routine, hopefully. And if he's been doing that and if he can land on Philly, man, that could be an exciting team to watch down the stretch.
Well, and what's really sad is you and I both want Le'Veon Bell to go somewhere other than Pittsburgh, and he's basically said he's sitting out until the trade deadline passes so that he can guarantee he's not getting traded, which is interesting because he can only get traded if he signs his franchise tag. So he's definitely not getting traded until he signs that, and those days are coming up very quick, and he hasn't even reported to the team yet, and they are back in action this week hosting Cleveland. So all the rumors that he was coming back after Labor Day, and then after week 3, and then 4, and then 5, and 6, and 7, and then the bye week, and now here we are week 8, and he's not there. So unlikely he gets traded, but we'll see.
No, probably not. But I mean,
I would like to see it, but I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah, and as far as you know, the actual signing of the deal goes, I wouldn't worry too much about that as a, you know, precursor to whether or not he's going to be traded, just because, you know, you're never going to hear an agent on the record admit this, but there are so many sort of wink-wink deals that happen that if they can come up with a deal between the two teams before the deal is signed, they can go to Le'Veon and say, here's what we're going to do. all you have to do is sign it. It's already in place. And right. so it could all happen very, very quickly at some point. But, of course, that's just speculation on my part. Who knows if it actually will happen that way. But, as you pointed out, you and I kind of hope it does.
Yeah, and we'll see how it plays out. So we are exactly at the 30-minute mark, so we got to get going. We appreciate you guys listening in. Again, if you didn't already, check out the podcast teaser article on OregonSportsNews.com. Check out the show. If you're not listening to this right now, shame on you. You ought to be. This is the show for Northwest, by the Northwest. We'll see you next week. We'll have a new 5 questions and answers for you. Feel free to add us if you want to suggest some new ones, because we're always interested in what the fans want to see and hear. So good luck this week and enjoy the fall weather. Don't slip out there. It is wet. It's a lot of rain, but hope you enjoy it. We waited a long time for the cooler weather, and here it is. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm Casey Mabbitt. He's Bryant Knox. We are Oregon Sports News. Thanks for listening, and stay classy, Portland.